Welcome to Game On with Grace, where we're not just talking cricket wins and losses, we're talking off-field antics, guilty pleasures, and the drive that never quits. Welcome to Game On with Grace. Hi everyone, I'm Grace Hayden, and on today's episode we have a very special guest, Chris Green. He has made the globe his cricketing playground. From every single tournament under the sun, he's been part of it and done an absolute superb job at it. We're going to be chatting all the highs and lows of his career, so I can't wait to have him on and hear all about it. Game on. Chris, welcome to Game On with Grace. I'm so stoked to have you on. You've just had a hell trip, though. You've come back from the CPL, but tell me about your journey back to Oz.
Yeah, some journey. It was in Guyana. We unfortunately didn't qualify for finals Barbados, so flew from Guyana to Barbados, which was about 2 hours. Had a six-hour layover there, so made the most of it. Had a long lunch and a swim, and then flew the 7 hours to London, where I then started my 14-hour layover.
A lot of time in the air. That's a big, big journey. Tell us about CPL, though. I mean, you've been part of that circuit, I guess, for a while now. What was different about this time? What did you love?
What did I love? I mean, I love it every year. That was my eighth year in a row of doing it. It's awesome. I love the people. As you know, you've been, but every island's just different culture, different atmosphere. Their passion for cricket is so cool. I love the rivalries between each island. This year, I guess the difference was I finished up in the 100 with Welsh Fire. I can't remember the date, but it was a Friday night game. Got on an aeroplane Saturday morning and was playing that night in Trinidad in front of a packed house. So it was like, again, a 7 or 8 hour flight over, an hour and a half bus trip straight to the ground. Met my teammates and on the field I went. So that was a whirlwind start to the tournament, but it was nice to then get to Barbados for 2 weeks just to settle in after that. So having a long stint in Barbados, at the Hilton, swimming a lot, playing golf on off days,
and then spot.
Trying to drag some wins in for the team. So it was a lot of fun. We didn't play great cricket at times. I think we dropped like 27 catches in 10 games. So it was a good effort on that front to drop so much. But I love the Caribbean.
Well, I wanted to get into our first segment. It's called Human Behind the Hype. So we get to know you a little bit off the stats, behind the scenes of all the cricket bits and bobs that you're obviously known for. Now, you grew up in a sporting family yourself. Mum and dad were pro tennis players. Tell me about that.
Yeah, look, I'm born and raised in South Africa. As I said, mum and dad both played professional tennis, both played at Wimbledon. So I pretty much learned to walk on a tennis court. Mum was a tennis coach. Dad got into finance after his career. But the competition and the rivalry was still is to this day, very strong between them on a tennis court. But my brother and I, learned to walk on the tennis court, would like join in with mum's lessons all the time. So sort of from age 3 onwards, tennis was a big, big part of my life. And then I think through the encouragement of both of them, it became my love and obsession with all ball sports, cricket, golf, soccer. Then they threw me in a swimming pool, taught me how to swim. It was swimming. Very, very sporty background, highly competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I think I consider myself as an upbringing point of view, like very, very grateful and blessed to have their background in helping and support me. You know, they were big on if you want to chase sport as a career, you need to have backup options. So, you know, university and school was a non-negotiable, particularly sort of when I was like 14, 15 and kids around me in the tennis world were dropping out of school and playing, and they were like, if you get injured or you lose love with it or you burn out, if you drop out of school, you've got nothing to turn to.
When was that? And was it really nice to have that support network that had been through the life of a professional athlete from both mum and dad's sides? I mean, I've had my dad's side experience, but to have both, did they ever butt heads at times and disagree?
Or not? I mean, I think from a disagreeing point, never to my face, maybe behind closed doors or whatever, but look, very, very supportive. I remember reaching sort of 17. My dad will probably say a little bit older, but I remember chatting to both of them being like, wow, I actually wish I listened to you guys a lot earlier when we were butting heads aged 10 to 15, 16, where I just refused to listen to them and I'd go to another coach in, you know, cricket, tennis or soccer and listen to them and be like, oh, eventually at age 16 or 17, I was like, oh, they're actually saying the same thing that my mum and dad have said the whole time in my life. But I think that's that element of self-discovery.
Another special person in your life is your wife, Bella. You guys got married in 2023, but tell us your love story. How'd you meet?
It was one of those classic love stories. We actually met on a dance floor. It's coming. We're talking about it today when I got back nearly 9 years ago to the day.
No way.
The Miss Crow's Nest Hotel.
Yep.
It was, eyes darting across the dance floor and across the bar. And then eventually I was a little bit under the influence. So was she. But I think she ended up coming up to me and saying hello. And then I was just obsessed from the outgo. And I took my sweet time to propose with all the travel and long distance. Mm-hmm. She's been so patient and so supportive. So, yeah, I'm very lucky. I've found a supportive, loving best friend that lets me go away, I guess, for half the year and keeps my stuff together at home and enjoys traveling over to come experience different parts of the world with me. So, it's been a roller coaster. Probably more so for her than it has for me, particularly through those COVID years. But it's been a lot of fun and hopefully it carries on that way.
How do you guys navigate long distance?
Well, that's a good question. I probably should call Bella through to answer it. Look, I think like just constant lines of communication is our number one. We sort of swap messages every day. It feels like it's a good morning, good night every day via WhatsApp. And then we catch up on the phone on FaceTime every couple of days and sort of keep things fresh, but also still check in. And then where it permits, she comes over and pops over for a bit. I mean, this year in England, she came the full time for the first time and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think it was on the hope that we'd do a bit more Europe trip gallivanting. I ended up playing four-day games for Lancashire, so that sort of put a hold on it, but she carried on and traveled with friends and family, which was really cool. And we snuck off to Mallorca for a weekend, which was amazing. She's come to the Caribbean, to Barbados and St. Lucia. She's done Dubai. I think just, you know, keeping in touch. And then I think, you know, when we are together, we ensure that those times are extra special and sort of make up for lost time and probably live a more gallivanting lifestyle, but it's because we're away for five, six months of the year from each other. So as much as I'd love to be a hermit crab when I'm home, it's date nights and catching out with friends and making things special and doing little bits for each other here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. I bet it's nice when she does come over. So you put the phone away and go, none of this anymore. It's just physical time. And you don't have to tell her about it when she's asleep or you're asleep. It's just, it can be a nightmare, but I bet it's really nice when she comes away with you.
No, it is. And like selfishly, I've said to her, I'd love her there the whole time, but it's bloody boring. You know, when I'm training or playing, she's sort of sitting around a hotel room or a hotel pool or whatever. So it's really, really tough. And when she is there, I'm very grateful because I've got my person, I've got someone to talk to and do nice things with and explore. And, I play a lot of golf when she's not there because that's my thing to do. Otherwise I'd just be sitting rotting in a place. I think she's picked up golf to not be a golf widow and a cricket widow. and we started doing that together, which is a lot of fun. But I'm very grateful of the time she sort of sacrifices to come over and spend with me.
Now it's time for a quick break. Don't go anywhere. With travel, you do have to find your vices in it too, because it can be really isolating, especially in the world that we're in. I mean, different time zones we talk about, but, you know, different teams all around the globe. But you know, golf you mentioned you're obsessed with, but do you have any other things that kind of keep you going when you're traveling?
I definitely overdo it on the golf front. I've probably lost some friends back home for playing too much golf, and but I have assured them on days off, like there's nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Where it permits, getting in the water, getting in the ocean. Mm. Obviously, the Caribbean makes that easy. Manchester doesn't make that so easy. No.
India doesn't make that easy.
No, Pakistan, yep. Dubai, it's okay. It's hard when you're comparing places to Manly. So I've got a really, yeah. really
high bar.
But yeah, nice food, finding a smoothie place or going out for breakfast rather than just enduring a hotel breakfast. I'd say breakfast is one of my favorite meals. So anytime I can find a good breakfast spot just to sit, chew the fat for a bit, waste some time.
People watch.
Exactly. You know, the longer you can drag out breakfast, the more of the day you've killed off. So, where golf and swimming doesn't permit, it's sit in a nice cafe or you know, find a place where I don't drink coffee. Don't judge me, but I
what?
I drink green tea. I know.
Crazy. How are you Australian and you don't drink coffee? That's sickening to me.
That
would stand you a good stead though. When you go away to different countries, because you can't find the same coffee anywhere. So I guess that's lucky in some way.
Yeah, I just have green tea, so it's very easy. But I tried all different types of coffee because during the COVID bubble, it was when I was with KKR, they just didn't accept that I didn't like coffee. So they're forcing me to try different ones. I said, look, I love the idea of it. I love the smell. Just can't do the taste. Can't even have tiramisu coffee. That's how bad it is.
Wow. Yeah. So you despise it, right? Okay.
Yeah, I think Bella says that's probably one of my biggest flaws, not eating tiramisu.
Oh, that's so funny. Let's talk about golf, though. Give us your handicap.
Well, it's contentious at the moment. My official handicap in Australia is 1.5.
Yeah.
But
that's horrible.
It doesn't include all the rounds I've played overseas, and I recently ran hot. So it's down to scratch.
Wow. Okay.
I got cut to scratch in the Caribbean by the group I was playing with. They weren't happy giving me one or two shots. It's in a good place.
Okay, you're happy with it.
Yeah, it's in a good place.
What clubs do you play with?
I play with Callaway clubs.
So do I.
They're great. They've been really good to me. I met a guy. There's the Callaway reps actually at my club, but before I realized that, two or three big bashes ago, I probably got one of the greatest emails I've ever received from the guy at Callaway saying, yeah, we'd love you to come down for a fitting. I said, oh my goodness, you've made my
You're
year.
You're like, yes, I'll be there anytime, day, you name it.
Exactly. Just, I'll clear my schedule. Yeah. If I have to miss a game, let me know. Yeah. I'll do it. So yeah, I've been with Callaway for 2 years now, and they've been fantastic. I don't even need to plug them. They've made my game very good. Through the golf balls and clubs, I think it's just added to my obsession.
Mm, me too. Yeah. I've only just started getting into golf this year, and my partner loves it as well. He's like, yes. Yeah. Like, I don't have to feel guilty about going on the course. You can come down too.
Thieves, the golf widow feeling. It's a thing.
I mean, it's between surfing. Exactly. It's between surfing and golf that I have to compete with. But I mean, I do both. So it's all set.
There you go. Your life's made.
Exactly. What's your favorite course you played on?
I did play on Pebble Beach on my honeymoon.
No way.
Bella walked around. She actually took photos, was there for the hype, everything. And I think that's where it sparked her bug. And then I played, I think my top three, it's easy to do a top three and I couldn't tell you in the order, but in terms of beauty and significance, I would say Pebble Beach, Sunningdale Old in England, and then Cabot Links in St. Lucia, which is just, it's quite new, and it's just like, there's some of the holes are just ridiculous. Like, you're hitting over the ocean on seven or eight of 18 holes. It's stunning. It's way too difficult as a golf course because it's too windy and too hard, especially playing off the tips. But yeah, scenic. I'd say those three. Yeah. Scenic.
Mm. And have you got a dream course that you want to get to?
You got to say Augusta. I mean, it'll never happen, but you've just got to say Augusta.
Don't say never. I reckon you'll be able to swindle something.
Well, if anyone's listening that can get us there, let's go.
Yeah, 100%. Anyone would want to go there.
Cricket for it.
Yeah. Get a cricket wicket out on there and then we'll be set. There's cricket wickets in baseball stadiums now, so who knows? They could be on a golf course soon.
Roll one out on the putting green. Be perfect.
Exactly. We're going to step away for a quick break. Don't go anywhere. More action is coming. All right, I want to move to our next segment. It's the Sports Roundtable. We're going to delve a little bit deeper into the cricket side of things now. You have been a big part of, you know, that next generation cricketer of taking on the short form franchise circuit, traveling all around the globe to different T20, games, I guess. What was the decision in doing that? Like, why did you not go into, say, a test format and, you know, rely on Sheffield Shield kind of games? Or was there a decision that you made that you went, nope, I'm going to go for the short format and I'm going to try and go from franchise to franchise? Or how did that sort of pan out for you?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, really. I look back on my first taste of it was 2017. I went to the PSL, and then 2018, it really started picking up for me with the PSL again, CPL. And then England came soon after that. And it wasn't really like, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to chase and pursue. It was more of a case of there wasn't a lot of opportunity at all for me to play cricket at home for New South Wales. Obviously, Nathan Lyon's here. It was Steve O'Keefe as well. And I was just playing a sporadic amount of one-day games. And then I obviously debuted for the Thunder in 2014 and started doing okay there. And I guess that got me some notice and opportunities to then venture out. And those early years right up until, up until when I made my first class debut 3 years ago, that was the only doors that were opening for me. So it was, I want to play as much cricket as possible. It still is the same way. I want to play as much cricket as possible with the best opportunities that allow me to chase my dreams of being, you know, the best cricketer I can possibly be. And that's how it sort of started out for me in, you know, specializing my game, I guess, was suited really well to T20 cricket. And then it was ensuring that I can stay alive in that format by specializing a little bit more in it. And then, whether it's through just good fortune, timing, opportunity, et cetera, 3 years ago, that opportunity finally opened up for me to make my first class debut. And I love the long format of the game. I certainly am in a position now where I haven't specialized in anything. I want to play any and all cricket available to me. And I love playing the 4 four-day games I did in England this year, and I'm hoping through the performances there and also last season that now that I'm home, I can continue to push my case to play here for New South Wales. So, it wasn't really a split decision of going, I'm going to be an all-out T20 player or I'm going to give anything away. It's just leave as many doors open as possible, and hopefully you choose the right door or the right door opens. And, I've got no regrets so far, and I'm enjoying all aspects of cricket that sort of come my way.
Absolutely. Now you've captained multiple teams across the globe. Do you enjoy that leadership aspect when you do get a position like that become available?
I do. I think, I mean, it's not something I actively seek out. I think as an off spinner in T20 cricket, particularly in the modern game, you have to kind of be thinking on your feet and thinking ahead of the game, because you don't have a threat, particularly as a conventional off spinner, you don't have a threat that players are scared of. You know, off spinners go around every cricket team in the world at every level. Off spinner is the first one that every batter is trying to hit out of the nets, hit out of the ground. And I kind of dine out on that, knowing that every player is not threatened by me and is trying so hard to whack me everywhere. If I can make it as difficult as possible for them, then hopefully my chances of being successful are higher. And I think that through my tennis background, it's thought me, forced me and taught me to think ahead about the game and, mm-hmm. and about the opposition, particularly about the batter or bowler I'm taking on. And that line of thinking is, I guess, I think through tennis has come naturally to me, and obviously aligns well with captaincy. I'm probably I'd probably be considered as an extrovert as well, as one of the louder people, particularly growing up, yelling at like yelling encouragement and whatever, rather than an introvert clapping along. So that probably helped at a junior and young age as well. And I've had some great experiences captaining. I've had some terrible experiences captaining as well. But yeah, it is something I enjoy. And like I said, I don't hold my breath for it. But if the opportunity comes, it's a great accolade to obviously have in any team or any format everywhere else.
Do you feel the pressure though when you are skipper?
A little bit. I think it just makes things busier. It makes like, so, and I think that's probably something that I've learned as I've got older. My first experience of captaining overseas was, I woke up one morning in Guyana and I went out the night before. We had a day off and I had all these missed calls from our manager, and he was like, you need to come downstairs right now to the team room. I walked, sitting around the table was our head coach, the two assistants, the physio, the masseuse, and obviously the manager. I was like, oh my God, I've done something wrong.
What happened? I'm going home. Did I black out accidentally? Yeah. What's going on? The rum punches.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I said, you're now captain. I was like, excuse me. This is my first tournament, first CPL. I'm still very young in 2018. And I said, what about Luke Ronke? They said, no, he's had a bad experience in Bangladesh recently. So he didn't want to keep if he's going to captain. And they said, we want him to keep. And then I asked about a couple other players. They said, no, they didn't want to do it. I was like, do I get a choice? They said, no, you're doing it. You're the last one. I was like, brilliant. But I loved it. I think there's times now from that experience and from what I've learned is just to still enjoy the cricket itself rather than be solely focused on all the captaincy stuff as well as my own game. You can obviously lose track of what's going on around you and sort of not experience the atmospheres and the fun and the ebbs and flows of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously you don't want to be too distracted as captain trying to take that all in, but that is something that I think is probably the biggest challenge and something that, you know, I still try and be present for when I do try, but it is very difficult.
I bet. Now, you've been, you know, a big part of the Big Bash League and you're a Sydney Thunder player. That's pretty convenient being a Sydney boy. How did you swindle that one? Were you like, eeny, meeny, miny, home for a guaranteed certain couple of months at Christmas time? That's not a bad gig.
That's certainly one of the most important factors now. But look, I'll be honest, that they were in 2014, I got this call while I was playing just club cricket in England from the then GM, Nick Cummins, saying, we want to offer you the last spot on our list at the Sydney Thunder. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is a joke. Someone's got a prank call on me. So they were the first team that gave me my opportunity as a contracted professional cricketer. I made my debut for New South Wales like the start of that summer, but I was not contracted. And they handed me my first paid contract as a cricketer in the summer of 2014. So, you know, they're the first team to back me, give me that opportunity. And, I love the club, everything it's about, you know, the direction that Mike Hussey, took it in alongside Nick Cummins was ensuring that, you know, they obviously had a really challenging start to the tournament, coming last in those first few years, sort of being the laughing stock of the BBL and they turned it around to be a really strong culture full of good people. The Western Sydney fan base is incredible. That stretches far and wide with New South Wales. We've got people driving 7 or 8 hours just to come watch us and then getting in the car, driving back that night. So it's an incredible club that, I love, and to have played, what is it, 11 years now, over 100 games, it's really, really special. And My goal is to try and double it. I've got to look after my performances and my body, but I'd love to, you know, finish up my career and a long way into the future at the Sydney Thunder. That'd be an absolute dream come true.
What's it like when you play beside icons of the game or people that you've watched and just idolized growing up? Are you shaking in your boots or are you asking them a million questions? Like, what's your personality? What do you do?
I'm very, very quiet. I still remember meeting Jack and Mike, and like my first day of Sydney Thunder, Jack Callis came and sat next to me just by chance. It was at an internal game in Bankstown. He put his bag down next to mine because it was the one time I was there actually very early, and my time management's like a minute before I'll be there. But I was there very early day one. He put his bag next to me, introduced himself, said, "Hi, I'm Jack." I said, "I know." was like the end of it. I was just in awe of him the whole year. And same sort of thing with Mike. I was very, very shy and quiet. And then the year later, I think through our coach, Paddy Upton, he realized that how much I loved and admired them. He sort of helped me and also helped them open up. And I recently had Mike Hussey as my coach in England in the 100. And the ice is certainly broken. And we're talking a lot of smack a lot of the time, which is great to have good relationships like that with people that, you know, are just great to the game is really, really cool. And that's the beauty of the traveling game and T20 cricket and meeting people along the way. And, you know, obviously guys at the back ends of their career can play a lot longer. So you get to play alongside or against some of the greats of the game, which is really special.
So cool. Big Bash, we saw, had a really successful season last year in terms of viewership with TV, also just people turning up in numbers as well and watching the games. I mean, it's always had that, but I feel this last year that's gone, it really had that momentum and injection back into the game. But in terms of the progression of Big Bash, I mean, there's murmurs about it maybe privatizing, but How excited are you about, you know, the next few years of this league?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think, as you say, like, it's probably been, yeah, year and a half now. Once all the disputes around viewerships and TV rights were sort of settled, that I think there's no more niggle within the partnerships of the game. And I think it's more recently in this back into the really good window in the Australian summer, and we're having more and more of our best players pop in and play, the likes of Steve Smith, David Warner, you know, from that test team wanting to come back and play, which is fantastic. So there's a lot of good things happening. They're pushing hard to have good overseas players in it, and I think the domestic level of it's good. So I think it's in a really, really exciting place for what's to come. I would love to see it be fully privatized. I think it's an exciting era for the game in Australia, and I think it'll actually take it to a new level. Having seen what has happened in the 100 with selling off 49% and some cases more, I think that's the potential for it to go to new heights and go back to challenging as the second league behind the IPL, both financially and strength-wise. So I think it's in a really exciting place to push that button a bit further in the coming years.
Absolutely. Cricket's in just such an exciting space in general at the moment. It's just absolutely everywhere. Even going through customs in the US, people are knowing about cricket. I mean, you never thought that would happen, hey?
Yeah. What's cricket? Now they know.
Yeah, it's so cool. Now, I want to talk about when you finally debuted for the Australian side in 2023. Walk us through that moment. You got the call. What were the emotions like?
Initially, I was very scared. I actually got the call the night before my wedding.
What? Timing of that is just insanity. So you're already stressed because you're getting married the next day and then you're playing for Australia for the first time. Oh, the head noise. I can't even imagine.
Well, I think the stress for a male before the wedding is probably a lot lower than a female.
That's true.
I get the call, I think it was about a month out or 3 weeks out, saying you're on standby. And I remember Bella listening, being like, "That's over our wedding." I was like, "Yeah, but it won't happen. we'll be fine. It never happens. I'd been on standby before a couple of times and I was like, oh, it's nice to sort of get the recognition. And then, yeah, I remember we checked into, I dropped Bella off at her accommodation with her bridesmaids. My groomsmen had sort of come in. We were sitting around having a beer about to go to our night before dinner with just our close family and obviously bridal party. And we cracked a beer and then I got this call. I was like, guys, I'm really sorry. I've got to take this. It's the Australian selector. So that everyone went quiet, listened to the phone call. He told me I was obviously selected. And at the end of the call, I was like, look, I am getting married tomorrow. Can I still do that? And he's like, yeah, sure. As soon as it's done, just get on a plane and you'll be out for the last two games of the series. So, that was a relief. It made I think we quickly polished off two more beers. My brother was one of my groomsmen, Bella's brother, and three of my best mates. So the excitement levels were pretty high. And then, quickly went over to the venue, had our dinner. I snuck and told Bella what was happening. And I think it sort of went over her head initially because we were setting up the table and everything. And then it sunk in and she came rushing back and, it was pretty cool. Like, it was a crazy weekend for us. I found out that I was going to be playing for Australia. She found out. She signed her first contract to go on the big screen and act in Last King of the Cross. So it was,
what a weekend.
And then, the recovery was where we told everyone, and the recovery ended up bigger than the wedding. it was a nervy start to it, but flying to India, my brother, dad and Bella flew out, and I think that moment was so special. Like, it was something that I always dreamt of playing cricket at the highest level, and once I moved to Australia and considered myself Australian, that was my dream to play for Australia, and it still is. So to have those three with me there and run onto the field in front of 45,000-50,000 mad loud Indian fans was very, very cool. And I think it was just a nice bit of recognition for not just myself, but everyone who's sort of helped shape my journey along the way, friends, family, coaches and the like. And it made it very, very special.
Were you emotional when you ran out?
I wasn't visibly emotional. I remember like running out with just like goosebumps and tingles and just on this crazy, crazy high. And I think I remember like, I mean, fortunately I was older, but if I was 21, 20, I would have been absolutely bricking it.
yeah.
Forced myself just to like slow down, take it in, look at the crowd. I'd done a lot of stuff with a sports psych just before or like at the start of COVID around, taking in the moments and not forgetting where you are. So that really helped me, but it was still very much a blur. The adrenaline was very high.
Now, sport, there's always highs and lows. You had a bit of a low in 2020. You had 6 months where you were out of the game. How did you come back from that mentally, more so than anything? I mean, such a, challenge to have to work through. I'm sure you had an amazing support network around you of people that have, being professional athletes, and you've got Bella in your corner and sure multiple mates, but I mean, that would have been tough to have 6 months where you're out and being questioned, I guess, too.
Yeah, no, it was. 2019 was a really, really good year for me. I was over in England. I think I went from tournament to tournament. It was my busiest year till date and most consistent year. Was in Canada, then straight to England, straight to CPL, came home, T10, started the Big Bash, was on this huge high. Then randomly the IPL auction happens and my name gets pulled out and I get signed by KKR. So the 2019 finished on a huge, huge high, and 2020 was exciting. Like, I was going to go back to England and captain Warwickshire. I was obviously going to go play in the IPL for the first time.
Yeah,
I had CPL retained. So it was going to be an amazing year. And then it sort of all came crashing down in January, at the start of January, when I found out I got banned for bowling. And I was in complete shock. 2019, I spent a month at the academy bowling in front of the analysts who ended up filming there and helping me through the process as well, and nothing was said. So, you know, I was caught off guard by it. I look back on it now, and it was a really tough position for me. I felt terrible. I felt embarrassed and ashamed. Obviously, you know, people say things, and you read things, and you are like, you start questioning everything. And, you know, like you said, I was very, very lucky that I had great support from my family, from Bella, and then from the cricket teams and the cricketing world. You know, Sydney Thunder and Shane Bond at the time was a coach. I had years on my contract still. They threw an arm around me saying, look, you've got our support. We'll help you through this. Let's get a process in plan in place. Warwickshire reached out. They said, look, this doesn't change anything. Your 3 months will be done. Brendan McCullum reached out saying, if there's anything we can do, he was the coach at KCAV, anything we can do to help, let us know. This is from what we see. There's nothing wrong with you. We'll get it sorted ASAP. So I had a lot of support.
And reassurance too.
Yeah, and reassurance that it was going to be okay. It was obviously unfortunate that I was going to miss the end of the Big Bash, or the remainder of the Big Bash. And then that COVID curtain came down in March or whatever it was, and it turned into 6 months. But what it meant is effectively I didn't miss any other cricket. Obviously, no one really flew over to England that year. Everything got pushed back.
Yeah.
And I had a 6 month training block to work on my game. I chose to, I guess, try and improve all elements of my game and myself. And it gave me 6 months at home. I look back on that now, and I think it's as bad as it was at the start. It was the best 6 months that I've had career-wise, because I think it reshaped my career. I felt personally like a one-trick pony with the ball, and I was in the back of my mind concerned when I was going to get found out of, can he do anything else?
Yeah.
Is there any other? Eventually, you know, batters get used to you. So I remodeled my action, remodeled my game, worked incredibly hard on my batting, and I think that laid the foundation for the 5 years up till now that's followed, where, you know, I've played my best cricket. I'm playing my best cricket. I'm playing consistent in all formats, and I think, you know, my goal was always to be an all-rounder, and I feel like I'm now genuinely considered an all-rounder. And yeah, I think there's still a lot of work to go, but it forced me to ensure that every now and again I've just got to stop and smell the roses and check in with myself, check in with my game, I add that to all aspects of my life, and I think it grounded me and gave me a lot of gratitude for what has been, what is, and what's to come. So I talk openly about it, about being the circumstances being really, really, but yeah, I think through the support and reassurance that I got, I couldn't have asked for a better experience in the end.
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes things just happen for a reason, terrible or not. And it sounds like in your case, maybe it was for the better, even though it was rough. But you know, if you can say it is for the better, then happy days.
Yeah. I mean, it was still, like I said, it was still horrible and tough.
Yeah.
And know that even when I do well, or that tag is never going to go away, and there will always be questions. That's just the nature of, unfortunate, the world we live in. Anytime you do well, people want to tear you down.
Tear you down. You should just tell them, you get out here and do it, mate.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. I have. But it's just, I think, you know, that's just the way of the world. Anytime you're getting more abuse online, it probably means
the better you're doing. Exactly. Well,
the more haters you have, the better you are. So
yeah, for sure.
It's just one of those things that it'll motivate more fuel to the fire, and again, force me to keep checking in on it and checking in on every aspect of it. And I feel like I've got a really good blueprint for how things are going and to keep things moving in the right direction. As I said, to try and play another 10 years.
Oh, you're on track. I love it. Yeah. Now, we got lots of US-based listeners. I've been asking people if they were to pitch cricket to a new, I guess, like, fan or someone who's heard about cricket and wants to get into it a little bit more, but US-based, how would you pitch it to them to come watch?
I love America. I've spent a lot of time in the States, particularly New York. New York's my favorite city.
It's Manhattan. So cool, hey. All the bars, little underground restaurants and everything. It's groovy.
Yeah, it's next level. I went to Dallas last year for cricket. That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And to the Americans that I meet and cross paths with when they're like, what do you do or what are you doing here? Is basically I'm here playing a more entertaining, shorter, faster, better version of baseball. There's more home runs. There's more action. There may not be as much dancing that goes on, but you can come and dance if you want. but I've been to some baseball games and they're long. They're great people watching, but they're so long. You see like one or two home runs if you're lucky.
And it's the foul balls. Hey, like I don't get it. Come to a cricket game and you get sixes and fours guaranteed.
Like, especially in America, the grounds are small.
Yeah.
But yeah, I say it's a better, more exciting version of baseball where you see more home runs, you see more action, hopefully. And you can bring the vibe and energy that you naturally have in all their sports. You know, I think tennis, golf, cricket and the like, baseball, all the NBA, if you bring that sort of vibe and energy that they naturally have to cricket, I think it'll only grow more and more, which is really cool.
Oh, I love that pitch. It even makes me want to get there now.
There you go. And if it doesn't work, then we just bring T10 in and then it's a sure.
Yeah, even shorter.
Yeah.
Now it's time for a quick break. Don't go anywhere. All right, we're going to move into a bit of a fun section now. It's red light, green light. So red light means no, you don't agree. Green light is, yep, I agree. But then you got to tell me why. You can't just say red light, green light and just stop there. No. You got to give me a little bit more, okay?
Yeah.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
T10 will eventually become bigger than T20.
Red light.
Yeah, I like that answer. All right, give me why.
T10 is fun. I think T10 is a great way to bring cricket into new places and potentially capture new fans. But I think it's like my version of T10 is it's like rugby sevens.
Rugby
sevens is a great like tournament event, but it's never going to replace rugby. And I think T20 cricket does a fantastic job in both the male and women's game. And is the perfect length of time. Obviously, everyone's trying to make it shorter and shorter to capture the attention of all generations. But, I'll stick to my red light, if that makes sense. I don't know.
No. I definitely agree with you there. It's true. All right. Playing golf is more stressful than cricket.
Oh, absolutely green light.
Why?
Because I find it more frustrating.
I was just going to say it's more frustrating. Like when you just aren't on, isn't it the worst feeling? Like days you're like, yes, I'm hitting them so clean and great. And then other days, you're like, what is going on? They're just going off pisk.
Yeah. When you break golf down, it's a ball sitting still that you have to hit in a direction that you try to. And you try and do it. You can miss the ball. You can hit the ground. The wind comes in. There's so many different elements.
Yeah.
And you've got to do it so consistently every time. I know cricket, you've got to be consistent, but at least there's far more excuses in cricket. Like there's opposition. Whereas golf, you're like, that was all me and I sucked. That was epic.
Yeah. I guess with batting too, like you've got a little bit more surface area that you can like hit the ball with and I don't know. And
moving. So there's an excuse for when it doesn't go well.
Exactly.
They did well. So absolutely great.
All right. The Big Bash should let fans vote live on a review decision.
Oh. Wow. I'll do green light if it's an umpire's call. I reckon if it's umpire's call.
Okay, right. So people, so the umpires that they feel like are at home sitting on the couch feel they're buying into the game a little bit, feel like they've got a little bit to do with the decision, but really it's. Yeah,
because
I
feel like the punters will see umpire's call and the ball clipping the stumps and they're like, well, if it's clipping the stumps, it's clipping the stumps, so it's out. Or, you know, it's Steve Smith first ball, it's clipping at the stump of some player's call. We're like, no, we want to see Steve Smith bat a bit more.
Yeah.
So I'm happy, especially if they look after me, if the punters choose on umpire's call. So it's a half
just
green
kiss
light.
A few more babies on the sideline, yeah. A couple more autographs and photos, and you'll be everyone's favorite.
It's a green light with an asterisk.
Okay. Yep. Tiger Woods is the GOAT.
Oh, compared to who? Everyone?
The GOAT.
Green light.
Ah, why the hesitation?
I just had to check.
I just had to check mentally.
I just had to check, but he was going to be up there. I'll just go green light.
Yeah, ooh. Fair. Okay. The best tennis rivalry is Federer and Nadal.
Absolute green light.
Mm.
There's just two greats of the game. I think we're seeing a closer version with Sinner and Alcaraz, but with less. I think that they'll always be compared, so they'll have less aura. But I just think Federer was, you know, the true ultimate gentleman, Rafa, the clay king, and then they just began to clash on all surfaces, which was just so cool. And it was just the way they played the game, the way they carried themselves. For anyone who loved sport or followed sport or loved tennis, or even if they didn't, it was just
icons.
The epitome of tennis and icons of the game. So I don't think that'll ever be matched.
No.
And I wish people trying to all the best.
Because you'll never get there. Yeah. All right, final one here. Pineapple belongs on pizza.
Oh, red light.
No, really?
I don't like pineapple for one. I'm quite a fussy eater.
Okay, clearly you're really fussy. I'm not inviting you over for dinner. You and Bella are not coming over to our place because you're going to be fussy.
Put pineapple on your pizza. But even if I like pineapple in an extent, like in some salads or whatever, but it's just not meant on a pizza.
Like, all right, fair. No. Yeah, the Italians would be screaming. They'd be like, no.
Yeah, exactly. They're the purists. So if they don't have it, we shouldn't.
Exactly. We'll be back with the final whistle up next. All right, final segment of the episode. We're just going to do some quick rapid-fire questions and then we'll wrap up. All right, so.
Do I have to explain answers again?
Yeah, just shoot some quick answers at me. That doesn't have to be too long. What's some of the best advice that you've received?
Life's not a race, it's a journey.
It was from
one of my dad's friends when I was 6 or 7, because I used to eat my food really quickly and I didn't really understand. That was what I thought it was all about. But as I've got older, I've sort of enjoyed it as just, you know, don't rush through every moment. Just take it all in. And it's not a race. Just enjoy the bumpy ride, highs and lows. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Favorite teammate to play with?
For pure entertainment value over the years, my number one seed, there's so many closely just underneath him, but Farwad Ahmed.
Okay. Give us a story.
He took me in under his wing the early days of Thunder as the fellow spinner. So he nurtured me. He took me out for meals, but I just thought he was hilarious, so kind, such an incredible human being. And we just... two very, very different individuals that got on like a house on fire and just caused absolute trouble. We refused to room with everyone else. I think we had 4 years rooming together, living in each other's pockets. And even when we traveled around the world during those years as well, we'd spend time in each other's rooms, just talking shop, having tea, eating dessert and eating way too much food. He knows the best restaurants there are. So I just,
tag along.
Him. And he was just so cheeky as well. So
trouble when you two are together.
Yeah, the perfect amount of funny, kind, and just downright wrong.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. What's one thing you hope people say about you in 10 years' time?
I don't know. Just I think someone that loved the game, had a lot of time for anyone, and hopefully always played with a smile on his face. I think that's something that I try and embody. I'm high, as I said, highly competitive, so that's why I say hopefully with a smile on his face.
I'll beat you, but I'll be smiling while I'm doing it.
And not competing too hard or pushing it too far, which everyone does at times, and I know I've done. But yeah, just someone who's seen to love the game. I was lucky with my upbringing and people giving me a lot of time, so I try and give everyone a lot of time. And someone who always has a smile on his face would be nice.
Now, athletes are known to have superstitions. What's the craziest one you've seen or witnessed?
There are some weird ones. I'm trying to think. I think I quite like watching guys, not necessarily the out there ones, but I like watching guys when they get changed. Oh, this sounds wrong already, but the way they put their stuff on, in terms of their clothes, shoes, socks, everything in the
order.
The order.
Yeah.
Very, very particular. Some guys are very, very neat with their bags. Mm. You hear they have the same meal every day. The sort of Rafael Nadal drink bottle style. On the tennis court, they're the ones that I love people watching. So I just stare and watch and be intrigued, and then muck around and move things around and
mess with their orders.
So I think those sort of some guys tuck their socks into their trousers when they bat, and it's just
rogue niche little moments.
Drawing that their drawstrings either out perfectly tied in a bow, or tucked in, or shirts to a different level. Like, everyone has these own weird quirks. So I just watching and trying to pick up on them, and then just ensuring and asking them if they've got things in the right way or not. So,
and then they have to do it all again because they go, oh, hang on. No, we haven't got there. We haven't done it right.
Exactly. I like trying to find the Rafael Nadals in the change room. Yeah. With their water bottle.
That's so good. Yeah. So good. All right. Final one. For youngsters that idolise you as a cricketer, what would be your advice to them wanting to achieve what you've done?
I think, wow, maybe find a different hero. I think, look, don't lose touch of that cricket is a game. Yeah. It's meant to be fun. You're meant to enjoy it. Enjoy it with, and I think along the journey of cricket, particularly I look back when I was a kid playing cricket rather, is before you leave school, that's your last opportunity. If you end up playing cricket or team sport, that's your last opportunity where you get to play with your real friends. When you leave school, all your real friends go in different directions. They don't carry on playing, maybe one or two if you're lucky, for a few years, and then people have to get jobs. So if you are lucky enough to go on the journey of professional cricket, just enjoy the game, enjoy playing with your mates, take it all in. Don't be too hard on yourself when you make mistakes. Mistakes are the best type of feedback. I think my early years, I was so obsessive, compulsive with, my example is one mistake, getting 99% in a maths test, focusing so hard on, oh my God, I'd made the stupidest error. I'm not smarter, and you forget about the 99 things you did well. I think we can do that as people, never mind cricketers, and don't lose sight of the things that you're doing really, really well. When you lose, or when you do make mistakes, or when you do fail, it's the best form of learning if you take that time to stop and reflect it. So yeah, have fun and turn your mistakes into learning, and it'll help you grow and become a good person, and ultimately hopefully a good cricketer as well.
Oh, beautiful advice. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciated your time, especially after you've just flown in. So thank you.
Helped keep me up.
You're going to need to do that because it's the worst when you fall asleep around 3 o'clock. But thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. And good luck for everything else that's to come.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun. I look forward to catching up soon. I'm sure our paths will cross somewhere. Even if it's external bubbles in Sydney.
Yeah, exactly. Way from you, across the bridge.
Exactly. Across the
pub. Oh, all right. Well, thank you. And I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
Well, that's all we have for this episode of Game On with Grace. I hope you guys enjoyed. Chris was such a great guest and obviously appreciate his time so much after his flight. But if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe, share, tell all your friends about it, because we've got so many more exciting guests coming soon. Till next time, stay competitive.